The 2014 Hong Kong protests began in September of this year. Students began protesting outside the government headquarters on September 22nd against the decisions of the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress, also known as the MPCSC, regarding its proposed electoral reform. Despite promising free and fair elections, the NPCSC disallowed civil nominations for chief executive elections, and the only eligible candidates were already approved by Beijing. This event has drawn international attention due to police tactics in response. The riot police in Hong Kong have clashed violently with protesters, using pepper spray and batons as weapons to subdue the crowds. According to the Wall Street Journal, as of October 3rd, there were 30 arrests and 298 injuries as of October 20th. These protests, reminiscent of the calls for democracy in the Soviet Empire in the 80s and 90s, are a reflection of China's failure in maintaining a two-system state. On October 1st, I came across a peaceful demonstration just within the university gates. I managed to get a hold of Elliot and Alicia, two of the student organizers of the event, and who were both generous enough to speak with me about their attitudes towards the Hong Kong protests. So I'm with Elliot Tan. I met Elliot on October 1st because he and a couple of friends and students of McGill hosted an event within Milton Gates to draw attention to the Hong Kong protests. So Elliot, can you tell me a little bit about the event itself?
So basically the event was organized to have a solidarity movement with the people of Hong Kong, the protesters of Hong Kong. And this really started because on, I think, Sunday, it was September 27th, I believe, in Hong Kong, was when the police got very, very violent using tear gas and pepper spray to clear out protesters. And at this point, I messaged Michael Law because I knew that he was pretty involved in the political scene around McGill. And I messaged him, like, asking, what can we do? Is there anything we can do? And he gave me a few tips just in terms of donating and then supporting them through Facebook, advocating, just spreading the word. But later that night at around 2:30, he messaged me saying that he was going to create an event because no one else in Montreal was, surprisingly. So Alicia and I got on board very quickly with him, and then we started organizing this event, which snowballed into what it was on that Wednesday, which was October 1st.
And from what I saw, because I couldn't see the whole event, it was essentially some Hong Kong students speaking out against the actions of the PRC,
right,
and stating their support, essentially, for solidarity with Hong Kong.
While there was some, I guess, a little bit of anti-PRC sentiment, we were very careful to make sure that it wasn't an anti-China thing. It was very much more a pro-democracy thing. Because the point of the Hong Kong protest was not that they wanted independence from China. They weren't trying to denounce the Chinese government directly. It was basically that they just wanted the rights stated, their universal suffrage rights and democratic rights stated them in their basic law at the time of Hanover in 97.
How do you think the ideas of democracy relate to human rights?
I guess democracy, in my opinion, is pretty well related with human rights, because without democracy, it's very hard for people to express their basic human rights. As well as with one, if someone is impeding on democracy, it's very difficult, or at least in history has shown that these types of leaders and governments haven't really allowed people to fully express human rights. So while that, it could be a case of correlation without causation, there is very much a case of the two being linked together, I would say.
It's been a month since I saw that event with you guys, and from what I read on the papers, it's calmed down a little bit in Hong Kong, in which I read that the riot police have been kind of withdrawn from the area. What are your next steps in kind of progressing this movement over here?
I think for now we're going to keep an eye on how things are going on over there, because really, if we were to organize and do another event, it would either because there would be a very good outcome or a very bad outcome. So in a way, it'd be kind of nice if nothing happened again, because it would seem that it would be a very bad thing. So we would have to group together again. It would be probably under a very bad thing, and that wouldn't be great, I guess.
Why is this specific issue in Hong Kong so important to you? Why did you decide that you needed to take action?
There's kind of two stories. Is there time to say
of course.
Both? Or? Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess the long story is that my family on my father's side has kind of a history of getting involved with human rights and student rights movements. It began with my great-great-grandfather. He was from the Xiamen region, but he eventually moved to Singapore, and he owned quite a sizable rubber plantation. And he was quite very wealthy. And a lot of this money he gave back to the Mao government for building universities and for the students. And because of this, and at the same time, during World War II, he was one of the very, very strong leaders in Southeast Asia of getting the overseas Chinese to give back money to the Chinese people back who were under occupation by the Japanese forces. So although he was, I guess, in the ring with the communist government at the time, I believe now if the same situation were to happen and he were alive now, he would support the student protesters in Hong Kong because he was at the front and foremost a student activist and not pro-communist per se. So because of that, I've been greatly inspired by him, and I just wanted to continue the legacy forward. And I guess a shorter side is that a lot of my family's there right now, and I wanted to support them. Like, my mother was there, and she got tear gassed, as well as a few of my cousins. They have been pepper sprayed and tear gassed as well. So upon hearing that, I was pretty moved to do something.
Are they okay?
They are okay, yeah.
Your family over there is also very supportive of the demonstrations and the protests.
It's a bit more complicated on my father's side. My mother's side was very much, which is funny seeing that. I mean, I just said that my father's side has a history of supporting the student rights movements, but there have been a few, I guess, outliers in terms of the extended family who are very much part of the upper upper businessmen class of Hong Kong, who are very much against the protest. So it's a bit more conflicted on that side, but on my mother's side, we're all very much supportive of the democratic movement.
What do you see happening for the future of Hong Kong? Do you see there being any progress made?
The more optimistic side of me would really much like to say, yes, there will be progress made. Yes, Hong Kong will get universal suffrage. But in reality, I really don't think it's going to happen. I mean, if the Hong Kong government allows the universal suffrage to happen, which is it's essentially saying the Chinese government will allow universal suffrage to happen in Hong Kong, it will be a very large show of weakness to them, especially, or show of weakness for them to the other, I guess, pseudo nations that want full independence and full independence from China, such as Taiwan and Tibet. And these nations have much more cause and much more ammunition they would get from Hong Kong getting universal suffrage. So if China were to back down in this sense, it would give the other sides way too much, I guess, ammo in the fight for their independence.
Yeah, I mean, recently there have been the violent protests in Xinjiang, right? Those areas which were originally autonomous, who are now asking for more. Now that we're discussing kind of ethnic minorities, I feel like there's two distinct causes for separation. One would be in terms of ethnic roots, which is a lot of where Tibet and Xinjiang lie in. Mm-hmm. And then Hong Kong is a little bit different because Hong Kong is the whole one state, two system idea.
I would say right now that the Hong Kong people are, fore and foremost, they're not trying to separate themselves for, like, we want Hong Kong to be an independent country. They just want to have the rights that were given to them in the basic law that was written out in the 1997 handover. I've been more interested to see what happens in the next 30 years in the lead up to, because I think is it 2047? 2047 is when Hong Kong will go back to being part of full China, as in it will go back underneath the Chinese system. I think the next 30 years will be very important in seeing how many people move out of Hong Kong to not go back to that system, or how many people will maybe come back to Hong Kong in anticipation of the system. So I can't really say for sure what will happen there, but it will be definitely very interesting to see what happens in terms of population shifts in the next 30 years.
It's so easy to comment on things that have been happening this past year, but what can we do in Montreal as students to help support or remain in solidarity with these movements?
It's very important to remain informed, to not let the Chinese government, whatever other oppressive governments that are doing or suppressing democracy, to basically get away with it. If something happens, we should be able to, well, we have the freedom to basically stand up for the people that might not have voices, be it through social media or a public speaking forum. We have to stand up for those without the voices, essentially. So watching out for them, I guess.
Fantastic. And is there anything else you'd like to add today?
No, I just thank you for the opportunity to speak here. It's been great.
Thank you so much, Elliot. Next, I spoke to Alicia, another coordinator, and asked her how she got involved with the event and how she felt about the protests.
So Michael first approached me via Facebook, and he basically just asked me if I wanted to get involved just because he was planning this in such a short period of time. And so I definitely thought it was something that I was very passionate about and that I could strongly identify with. So I don't really have like a particular role. I think we're more of just like all co-organizers, co-coordinators, and Michael was the creator of it. But we've definitely all had agency in making this sort of movement come to Montreal.
Okay, I'm going to jump on one of the comments that you made in which you said that you could really identify with this situation. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, actually, my mom is Vietnamese, so I'm Vietnamese. And so I've definitely grown up with a sense that expressing like your voice and your right to democracy and your freedom of expression is so essential to being a human being, and also for like the Vietnamese identity as well. My grandfather was actually a politician during the Vietnam War, and we were North Vietnamese. So, and my grandparents, you know, my grandfather always spoke up for what was right, even though it was against the government and the Viet Cong at the time. And my grandparents really did give up everything to express that right. So when it came to the Hong Kong protests, I found so much solidarity and inspiration in it. And it was actually really beautiful to see that, I know you were at the protest, but there was also a large Vietnamese community that came out of we call them like the boat people generation. So from my grandparents' generation. And I think they're really inspired to see that they still had, you know, youth fighting for the same things that they have been fighting for over 50 years now. So I thought it was really inspiring to see that.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And I know it's drawn a lot of international media attention, most of it being negative, obviously, because of how the police have responded to the protesters with tear gas, batons, just horrific pretty much acts. Do you think we're dealing with a human rights issue, a political issue, an economic issue? What's your stance on that?
I definitely think that this is a human rights issue, kind of mediated through politics, and also police brutality has been a really hot topic, you know, all around the world. And I think that's why this caught so much attention right away in the media. Just because, you know, you see that there's been, you know, police brutality in Ukraine with the Ferguson protests. There's been recent protests in Mexico about like missing professors and students that have also been met with police brutality with the Occupy protests. So this is definitely a reoccurring theme around the world. And I think just seeing that in such a large scale in Hong Kong has been really inspiring to see. And also I actually wrote an article about this, but to see that the Hong Kong protesters were using the hands up, don't shoot gesture as kind of like a symbolic gesture to protest or in resistance. But it just showed so much intersectionality and solidarity with the Ferguson protesters. And I thought that was very beautiful to see that this really is a global movement. So, yeah.
Moving a little bit away from Hong Kong and kind of on to the point where this is a global movement, we see so many cases of police brutality, honestly, internationally, all over the world, almost every day of the year. Why do you think this is still something that we haven't been able to deal with? Why do you think it's still accepted?
I don't know if it's necessarily still accepted. I think that police brutality has definitely always been an issue, but I think just because there've been so many movements in the past couple years, that police brutality has always kind of coincided with resistance movements and protests. So this has really come to the forefront of global issues and human rights issues.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Moving back to Hong Kong, the situation's died down a lot, although it's still ongoing. Mm-hmm. What do you think the next steps are right now?
Well, there's still a lot of protesters out there. There's so many, like, just to have like thousands of people still in the streets after like it's been like a month and a half now, Like, that's still such a strong image, even for, like, the everyday Hong Konger. It's really, I was talking to Michael about this, one of the co-organizers, and we were talking about how this really has been a cultural revolution, I think. You know, after having your city or your region really just gather in the thousands to protest, and there's been so many movements inside the protests, you know, like a youth movement, people have used music, people have made tremendous speeches, just the way that the community has come out to support one another. It's definitely, I think, woken up the people of Hong Kong, and I don't think this is something that they're ever going to forget. Even if there is not a lot of change in policy or change in politics, I think the whole population of Hong Kong has definitely gone through something that will change their perspective of politics for years and years to come. So I think that's something that should be celebrated, definitely.
I agree. I think there's so much that we hear about politics creating divides in society. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a beautiful case in which, I think, in my opinion, politics has created kind of solidarity. It's amazing what people will do, you know, to activate what they believe is their social rights and their civil rights. Are there any next movements or next steps for the organizers of the event?
Well, we haven't really thought of what to really do for our next steps. I mean, we gave the sort of petition to the Chinese consulate. I know that I've been talking a bit with some of the members of the Vietnamese activist community, which is actually a huge activist community in Montreal, and I was talking to them, and I think like 3 weeks ago they had a sit-in in front of the Chinese consulate, and they were protesting I think a pipeline that was being built from China to Vietnam, and they had over 200 people sit in front of the consulate. So I think we'll definitely have to see how this movement kind of goes along to see what the next steps will be. But I think it would really be great if we had like a discussion panel or something that we could really like come together and talk about this, because I think it, like, as much as the Hong Kong movement is such like a huge deal and something that we want to focus on, I think that there are a lot of other activist movements at McGill and in Montreal that could be highlighted through this platform as well, and just kind of reviving like the activist community in Montreal, because it is such a big one, and I think that it can really be repurposed in a very useful way. So yeah,
I agree. I think one of the reasons why I wanted to cover Hong Kong in this specific segment was because I found that there was still not a lot of media coverage on it. I felt like it really didn't get what it deserved. And we know that especially in China, it's not going to get what it deserves either. So I think one of the most important things is to keep people educated and knowledgeable on what's going on. But on that note, it's really difficult, I think, for me as a student at McGill. I'm so far away from the situation. What can I do if I wanted to help, if I wanted to kind of support that movement?
I think the biggest thing, you know, I'm a big believer in the saying, like, act locally, think globally. So really just investing in your own sphere of influence and making it bigger and really bringing this issue to the forefront and just educating, you know, whether it's like your best friends, like people in your class or your conference about really what is going on past all, you know, the media and past all the censorship and past all the bad journalism. Like from your own personal experiences or from experiences from others, and kind of what you see in it and the potential that you see in it. And in that way, when it's coming from your voice, you can make it relevant to others. So I think just educating people properly on it and bringing it to the forefront, because for a lot of people, you know, they'll probably only have read like maybe the BBC article on it. And so that's all, that's really the extent of their experience with the movement. But I feel like if people really make the step to kind of put their voice out there, it makes it a lot more human. And I think that it's always something that's really essential to do with political issues, because people kind of objectify political issues and are like, kind of think of it as separate from their own reality. But, you know, like, we're here, we're doing this interview, and like, obviously we think we identify with this in some way, and we think that it's important. And I think exploring why people want to highlight certain issues is also something that needs to be highlighted. So, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Alicia?
I don't think so. I think that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you.
Let me paint a picture for you on what Hong Kong looks like now. Since the violent attacks of police volleys of tear gas and pepper spray over a month ago, the area is now a collective, carved out by elaborate barricades. Volunteers hand out bottled water, biscuits, coffee, and supplies for their extended stay in the protest zones. Camera shutters snap, and iPhones capture the speeches and demonstrations made every evening. We live in a digital age, and the protest is certainly documented as such. Perhaps the people of Hong Kong see the support, perhaps they see the solidarity shown for them all over the world, and perhaps they see all the people joining them in standing underneath this umbrella revolution.